Looking for the best place to buy tickets for any of your favorite teams or sporting events? We've got the spot. Our partner, StubHub, has been the leading ticket marketplace in the world for over 20 years, providing a 100% guarantee with every order. From a worldwide selection of live events, the widest choice of tickets, and industry-leading partnerships, StubHub has what you need to purchase with confidence. StubHub, an official partner of The Athletic.
As you've probably heard by now, we've teamed up with BetMGM this season. We'll be using BetMGM lines to make all of our picks, and we'll have special offers for our listeners each week. If you haven't signed up for BetMGM yet, use bonus code THEATHLETIC, and you'll get a one-year subscription to The Athletic, plus up to a $1,500 first bet offer on your first wager with BetMGM. Here's how it works. Download the BetMGM app and sign up using bonus code THEATHLETIC. Make your first deposit of at least $10. Place your first bet on any game and claim your voucher for a one-year subscription to The Athletic. See BetMGM.com for terms. U.S. promotional offers not available in D.C., Mississippi, New York, Nevada, Ontario, or Puerto Rico. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER. Available in the U.S. Call 877-8-HOPE-NY or text HOPE-NY-467-369 in New York. Call 1-800-NEXT-STEP in Arizona. 1-800-327-5050 in Massachusetts. 1-800-BETS-OFF in Iowa. 1-800-270-7117 for confidential help in Michigan. 1-800-981-0023 in Puerto Rico. First bet offer for new customers only in partnership with Kansas Crossing Casino and Hotel. Don't forget, if you haven't signed up for BetMGM yet, use bonus code THEATHLETIC and you'll get a one-year subscription to The Athletic, plus up to a $1,500 first bet offer on your first wager.
Hello, everybody. Welcome to The Athletic Support, your podcast on the Montreal Canadiens on this Monday, July 19th. I am Marc-Antoine Godin with Arpin Basu. Quite a weekend, eventful weekend, Arpin. So let's dive right into it. Carey Price.
Yeah.
Open Carey question. Price. Carey Price, man.
Yeah. So, listen, I mean, it just, there's obviously a whole bunch of factors here. And there's going to be some questioning of what the Canadians are doing here. You know, the Shea Weber news comes out. So he gets left exposed because he's an injury risk. Now Carey Price is apparently an injury risk. He gets left exposed by his own volition, by his own suggestion. You know, both stories have some logic to them. Both stories are based in truth, but it's going to be normal for the NHL community to kind of look at this situation. Both the same team, two veteran guys, two guys who otherwise would be appealing to Seattle if they were fully healthy, both of whom being exposed due to injury risk. I think it's what's important to note, and I think what a lot of the skeptics probably don't realize to a full extent is how this is not what Marc Bergevin would have ever wanted. What Marc Bergevin would have wanted would be to submit his protected list and have both Shea Weber and Carey Price on that list. That would have been his ideal scenario.
That was the expectation all along.
Yes, it was. And so, you know, the Price thing and the Weber thing are obviously different. Weber, it seems obvious at this point that he's going to be, at best, maybe miss half a season in a best-case scenario, but obviously the worst-case scenario is far worse than that. Price's situation is obviously different. I think Price, and the reason why Seattle is seriously considering him regardless of this injury news, is that his injury, his surgery could, if he goes for surgery, which it sounds like he will, could leave him out for 6 weeks. It could be a standard procedure, and it could just be they go in there, they find what they're looking for, they fix it, and he's ready for training camp or shortly thereafter, maybe early in the season. But the other possibility exists which is exactly what happened to Shea Weber in this exact same situation where he went under anesthesia thinking that he was doing a minor procedure on his knee and expecting to be out for 6 weeks. And he woke up and he was out for 5 to 6 months. So that, considering, and we don't know which knee we're talking about with Carey Price, there's obviously one knee is a little more sensitive than the other. So there are elements of risk involved for Seattle, and everyone in Montreal knows that. But it does, you know, Angela Price going on her Instagram story and saying, everyone chill out, the details will come out soon, all this stuff, you know, it's like it's, there's obviously more to this story than just this, but it is interesting to me that Carey Price had, that it came from him, that he was like, if I'm going to miss part of next season, then we need Jake Allen more than ever. And I would like to come back to something that's, you know, a team that's in contention for the playoffs. I don't want to come back and we're completely out of it by then. So there are a lot of motivating factors at play, but I think somewhat the elephant in the room here is that if Seattle were to take Carey Price, while it's not something he actively wants, it wouldn't be the worst thing in the world for him either. There are obviously the family ties. Angela's from, you know, Kennewick, Washington, the Tri-Cities area. He played in the Tri-Cities area. So if this were some other place, would Carey Price have done this? I don't know. I'm not sure. But like the worst case scenario here for Carey Price is probably not that bad of a case is what I'm trying to say.
Right. Well, the fact that he's the one who suggested it is because he didn't want the Canadiens to lose Jake Allen, have him out, and the Canadiens scrambling to find a goalie, and he would feel responsible of putting them in a bad spot. So I think there's some of that that comes into play. I think also that in this particular case, though, I know that there are complaints around the league to the fact that, you know, the Canadiens are coming with this injury history with both Price and with Weber. But I mean, they were still playing not so long ago. It's not like as if it was a team that had missed the playoffs and you pull this trick out of your sleeve at the last minute. I mean, this is something that's very recent. And I think that, as you mentioned, right, when it comes to Marc Bergevin, he would rather not have to deal with this. And I'm not exactly sure, injury or not, if Price remains that attractive of a target at this point for Seattle. We know that they're looking at it, and rightly so. I mean, they should. It's, everybody says how he could be the Marc-André Fleury of Seattle, but it remains a huge financial commitment. So ultimately, the injury adds a layer to it, but the contract itself is a little bit of a deterrent in itself. And, you know, you're talking best situation, worst situation for Price. Of course, being picked up by Seattle is probably the next best thing for him. But for the Canadiens, I don't see a situation where they're actually losing, because if they keep him, it remains status quo with Price and Allen, which worked out pretty well this season for them. But if he's claimed, then the Canadiens start, you know, they turn the page on an era, which would be very significant. But at the same time, it opens up all sorts of opportunities. And it's probably the occasion for the team to say, okay, well, we're starting off fresh. We might not count on Shea Weber anymore. We don't have Carey Price anymore. Jonathan Drouin's future with the Canadiens is murky at best. There are indications that Philippe Dano is going to walk away. So there's really a potential for a huge turnover from the team that went to the Stanley Cup Finals to the one that we're going to see potentially next season. So yes, there is adversity and challenges, but potentially there is great opportunity for the Canadiens to get younger, to invest their money into a different set of players, and not being handcuffed by their salary cap at all. So it's not entirely bad. in my books, especially when you look at the way Carey Price has performed in the regular season. Definitely, he's stepped up his game in the playoffs. He's been amazing. But he's been inconsistent during the regular season, and that counts for something when you're 34 years old and you've got a injury history.
Absolutely, and you add to that list Marc Bergevin's own murky future. And just think of the opportunity. If you're in Marc Bergevin's shoes, you are tied to these two players. You have banked your entire reputation as a manager on the success of these two players. If you are to lose them based on a situation that was out of your control, it's like the perfect out, and in a sense. Like, it's kind of like, you know, I didn't give up on these players. I didn't decide to move on. Circumstances made it so that they had to move on. If I myself am to move on after next season, what kind of a gift am I leaving to my successor than to clear up $18 million in cap space, to have all these prospects, all these draft picks I've gathered over the years, these veterans, you know, effective players signed long-term, Gallagher's on a long-term, Petrie, Anderson, Toffoli, you have Edmondson, you have some pieces there to work with. You have a lot of young players, some young players come who are already on the team, others who are coming, but that core of Romanov, Caulfield, Kotkaniemi, and Suzuki are there. You've left your successor with a very desirable situation. And the thing about the Price contract, and I agree with you 100%, it's almost a win-win for the Canadiens in the sense that it's easy to think of the last run to the final and be completely enamored with Price, and that's it's perfectly normal. He was outstanding. He was great. He led them on their best run in almost 30 years. He deserves credit for that. But the reality of the situation is that, you know, regular season Price hasn't been anywhere near the level you expect from just a typical number one goalie, let alone one that costs $10.5 million a year. So there is a two-sided element to his importance to the Canadiens that needs to be considered here. And I'm sure Seattle's going to consider it as well. And so I personally would be shocked if he was taken, but that's a consideration that I know Marc Bergevin has had in his mind. He must have, because who fires a goaltending coach in the middle of a game if he doesn't realize that there's something wrong with his goalie? You know what I mean?
That's right.
He's clearly aware of the situation. So when Price suggested it to him, I would imagine that Bergevin was like, okay, well, that's a weight off my shoulders. Like, I don't have to propose this to Price. It's not something I would ever want to do. So if he's amenable to it, probably because he's not totally opposed to going to Seattle if it were to happen. It's not something he wants. He'd rather stay here. But if he has to go there, as you mentioned, next best thing. But Bergevin's own future here is part of the equation in terms of turnover. Because if Deno were to walk, I'm honestly super intrigued about Seattle having a window to talk to him. Because Seattle's banking hard on analytics. They've hired some very, very bright minds to run their hockey data operation over there. And you look at Deno from an analytical standpoint of view, he's a very, very, very effective player.
Yeah.
Like, very effective. More effective than his goals and assists would suggest. So
plus the centers that are being offered to the Kraken, when you look at the list, it's not in a very enticing list. It's not a deep list.
It's Yanni Gould and the rest.
Pretty much, yeah.
Yeah.
So, I mean, if I was the Kraken, I would definitely look at the UFA options. And looking at a guy like Dano, he might not be your first-line center, but you could have him as your second-line center, and you'd be in pretty good shape.
Yeah. So that only, you know, it only adds to my point here, is that when you mentioned that the Canadiens would be better off, it really depends on what Bergevin wants to accomplish next season. If there's no Weber, if Price is gone, if Dano's gone as a UFA, is he going to go buck wild on the trade market and the free agent market and spend all sorts of money just to keep the team competitive this year? Or Does he take a more patient approach, add a piece here or there, but nothing humongous to essentially pave the way for the new GM to have a very, very good situation to work with? Lots of cap space, talent on the team, talent in the pipeline. It's an interesting dilemma, because if I'm him, we just came within, if I'm in his shoes and I'm Marc Bergevin talking right now, and we just were 3 wins away from winning the Stanley Cup. The one thing I wanted to do as GM of this team is win the Stanley Cup. I have 1 year left in this job, if that's in fact the case, who knows, but he's strongly suggested that that's the case at this point. Are you able to punt your last year and just be like, okay, I'm going to be patient and I'm going to set the table for my successor and make sure the long-term health of the organization, which he's always said is his number one priority, takes precedence over his one last shot at doing something with this group, which obviously is not anywhere close to the same group that he went after it with last year.
Yeah, that's true. And at some point, I mean, depending on the pieces that are remaining, I mean, you'll have to gauge which of the two options is the most responsible. It's not a guarantee that going like the patient approach or the long-term approach is necessarily the right thing to do. It looks that way, but I mean, there might be a way to, even without Weber, to try to reassemble a team that might be competitive next season. But the tricky thing is that to begin with, they extracted every little bit, not only of talent, but of desire, of determination from that group to, propel it to as you said, three wins away from the Stanley Cup. So I think that extracting the most out of that team was a feat in itself. Being able to do it 2 years in a row seems to me like almost ludicrous or next to impossible. So it's not just keeping the team together, it's finding ways to improve it to make sure that you'll get over the hump. Because all that, I think there's really something to be said about synergy and teamwork and will and all that. And I think that they made an amazing, demonstration to that effect this season. But when it comes to skill, when it comes to sheer talent, talent in depth, also the way that the Lightning has, I mean, they've got ways to go to be a team as strong as the Lightning. So it's going to be a tricky proposition.
Even the Lightning has a ways to go to be a team as strong as the Lightning. They have a lot of stuff to deal with this offseason.
Yeah.
But the one thing that just struck me in thinking about, how Bergevin approaches is that, I know they just signed extensions, but like, I wonder what Brendan Gallagher's thinking right now. I wonder what Jeff Petrie's thinking right now. Like, this, all this stuff happening, I'm sure to some extent they were aware of what Weber was going through. That can't come as a complete shock to his teammates, I would think. He's not one to complain. He's not one to talk about it, but they had to know in some way. I'm sure Weber didn't volunteer that information, but they could probably see the preparation that he had to do behind the scenes in order to be able to play at the level he played at. I mean, it's incredible to think that this information comes out. His best series of the playoffs was the final.
Yeah.
Like he was at his best in the final. And so
Petrie hinted to that, to the fact that, they could appreciate how big of an effort it was, because they could see how hurt he was.
Right. So that's not a shock. The price development has to be a bit of a shock.
Yeah.
Like, it has to be a little bit surprising, especially considering the nature, the seeming nature of the knee operation sounds like more of a procedure than like a surgery. I think that's the anticipation of what's going on with the knee, and apparently he had his hip checked out as well. The reality of Carey Price is that his body will break down at some point. He's gone through so much stuff. He's played a lot of hockey in his life. He's had a number of lower body injuries. It's inevitable. But for him to be exposed in the expansion draft based on this set of circumstances, I would think has to be a bit of a surprise to two guys who are about to start new contracts with this team and are starting them based on the knowledge that Carey Price was going to be their goalie.
Yeah.
You'd have to think it had, it played a factor in there. So it's just, it's an incredibly interesting time for the Canadiens. And as you mentioned, I agree, should be looked at as an opportunity more than some sort of devastating thing, because 6 months ago, hell, 2 months ago, if someone had said to the typical Canadiens fan, hey, 2 months from now or next season, it'll be possible that you will have neither Carey Price's nor Shea Weber's contract on the books for the Canadiens, how do you feel about that? I'd say maybe 8 out of 10 Canadiens fans would be excited about that.
Yeah.
Would that be fair to say? Not having seen how they performed in the playoffs. And so there is a bit of a recency bias going on, but you can't forget what Price has done over the last 4 years in the regular season. Like, he's had one good regular season in those 4 years. And, you know, Weber's had his ups and downs of late, ever since the foot injury, ever since Jack Eichel launched that shot off his foot opening night in Buffalo. He's had ups and downs. And so
mobility has been an issue. I mean, you could tell also that it was not, he never got comfortable enough, you know, using his slap shot the way that he used to. I mean, when you have Shea Weber on your team.
That was after the thumb, yeah.
Yeah, but even before. I mean, we were writing something. Yeah, you're right. That was after the thumb. But there's something, you know, when you use also your lower body to power your slap shot, you know. So and if you cannot, you know, set your skates on the ice properly and be in the right position, you might lose some of that strength. You know, it's not just upper body.
Right.
But anyway, he's been. You say that Price has got has paid the toll physically, but so did Weber. So they're both they're both pretty much at the same crossroads. I mean, Weber is a tiny bit older, and he seems obviously closer to the finish line. But the Canadiens are in similar situation with those two guys, and you're right to say that when you look at Gallagher and Petrie and guys like that who committed themselves long term to the Canadiens, they must wonder what's going on. But even a guy like Corey Perry, who showed interest in re-signing with the Canadiens. Who had a very positive experience of his time in Montreal. Well, all of a sudden, the landscape's different because the group could be very different. So, you know, all that, everything that those young players have learned from the veterans, from what it takes to win, what it takes to sacrifice yourself and commit yourself to winning the way that this group has, it's going to be interesting to see if that learning experience is going to prevail over the letdown of having so many guys that leave. Again, potentially, because we don't know what's going to happen with Price. I agree with you. I think that it remains unlikely in my view that the Kraken selects him, but we cannot discount it.
No, absolutely not. And they're doing. It is an opportunity for them as well. And there are other layers than on the ice to it. You know, I mean, having someone with Price's name recognition, his ties to the area, there are a lot of marketing opportunities that you, although one thing I should say, the Marc-Andre Fleury comparison is the easy comparison to make. There are a lot of differences. A, Marc-Andre Fleury is an eminently more marketable personality than Carey Price is. Like, it's not even... They're not on the same scale.
Yeah.
Marc-Andre Fleury went to Vegas with something to prove. He had been discounted by his team. It was his abilities. They chose Matt Murray over him. His career was seemingly done. He was going to go right off into the sunset in Vegas. And the Penguins gave Vegas something to take him. He had a chip on his shoulder. There was a very different dynamic at play there. Price would be riding in as a conquering hero, as the guy who just led a mediocre team to the Stanley Cup final. He would be coming in as the superstar on the team who would have pretty high expectations of performance. There are different situations. I see the similarities, obviously, the superstar veteran goaltender, whatever, but it's not the exact same.
Don't just ride the index, seek to outperform it with Fidelity Active ETFs. Learn more at fidelity.com/active ETFs. Before investing in any exchange-traded fund, you should consider its investment objectives, risks, charges, and expenses. Contact Fidelity for a prospectus, an offering circular, or if available, a summary prospectus containing this information. Read it carefully. While active ETFs offer the potential to outperform an index, these products may more significantly trail an index as compared with passive ETFs. Fidelity Brokerage Services, LLC, member NYSE SIPC.
Looking for an assist with your credit card but can't get a hold of anyone? Luckily, with 24/7 US-based live customer service from Discover, everyone has the option to talk to a real person anytime, day or night. Yep, you heard that right. You can talk to a real human in customer service anytime. Sounds like a real game changer if you ask us. Make the right call and get the service you deserve with Discover. Limitations apply. See terms at discover.com/creditcard.
But so let's say Price does get taken.
Yeah.
Let's do this thought exercise. So that means they haven't taken Philip Deneau, which means the Canadiens would still have until July 28th to negotiate with him, because that would mean the Kraken would not have signed him. That means they haven't taken Jonathan Drouin, which is something that the Canadiens would then have to deal with afterwards, because it's clear that they are going to try to find a place for him to play. He wants to play. It's quite clear at this point that he does not want to play here anymore in Montreal. So there's a mutual thing there where the Canadiens will have to figure out how to get him to a spot. Do they have to eat some of the money on his contract? What does that trade look like? Can they expect anything in return? Because just of the leverage dynamics in that, a trade like that. You know, what happens? Because if I were the Kraken, I would select Jonathan Drouin. I just, on the outset, I would say that.
Oh, yeah?
That okay. I would take him. I
would take a chance on him. What would be your logic behind it?
My logic would be high risk, high reward. And if it doesn't work out, there's a certain amount of depth at forward, especially on the wing, that team should have, where they could absorb Jonathan Drouin not working out.
Right.
If he does work out, he's got 2 years left at a reasonable $5.5 million. If he becomes a 50-point player for them, that's a good investment. That creates, you know, I think they have the potential to have a really interesting top nine on the wing. The center position is going to be an issue, but he could slide right in there. Him, Dadonov, maybe a Tarasenko, maybe a Van Riemsdyk. Like, there's some interesting names to
Zucker.
Throw in on the wing. Zucker, yeah, there's guys that can make for a very interesting top nine mix. And no matter what people in Montreal think of him, Jonathan Drouin is not a bad hockey player. You know, I mean, he's had consistency issues, obviously, but I believe that getting out of Montreal I think it would be a good risk for them to take to bring him into a new environment where everyone's starting fresh, not just him. It's not like he's going into like an established team and everyone knows that what happened in Montreal, that he needs a fresh start, but he has to integrate this team that's already all bonded and whatever. Like, it would be the ideal situation for Drouin to find his game, to walk into an expansion team and have it be a fresh start for everyone, you know, right. Not just him. So I would do that. But if they don't, let's say they take like Brett Kulak or whatever, you know, and how do you see that? How do you see a potential Jonathan Drouin trade looking? How do you think the dynamics are in that?
Oof. It's a tricky proposition. First off, I want to say I don't think I understand how Drouin could be a nice gamble for Seattle. The way, you know, you mentioned guys, you know, guys like Van Riemsdyk, Tarasenko. There are a lot of offensive gambles throughout the league. Dadonov is a gamble. Max Domi is a gamble. Ryan Johansson is a gamble. Tons of guys. Mm-hmm. So that the Kraken will pick a few of those guys and figure out where the best gambles are. But Drouin has $5.5 million on his contract for two more seasons. And this is not far from what Philippe Danault is looking for. And if I'm the Kraken, knowing how the center position is thin, I would rather spend that sort of money, roughly, on a guy that will fit a need, rather than making a gamble on a guy like Drouin. So that's my personal take. If Seattle ends up choosing Drouin, I think it solves the issue for the Canadiens, because they would not. I don't think that because of price, because of Danault, I don't think that the Canadiens are in a situation where they're going to pay anything to the Kraken to convince them to take a certain player. Whoever they take, they're going to take.
Yeah.
So they're not going to add something to convince the Kraken to take Drouin. But in another situation, dealing with a team, with some other teams that might show interest in Drouin, who might be squeezed against the cap, which is, I mean, the reality for three quarters of the teams, then it might be an issue. So you have to look at probably some of those guys that we named, some of the guys that have been exposed and that for different reasons, and who are considered by their respective teams as, you know, guys that could potentially be moved. And then you see, is there a fit, you know, moving, quote unquote, my problem for your problem. I hate to call them problems, but that's there are issues to deal with. Because otherwise, if you just simply move Drouin without expecting anything in return, you're not going to get much of an asset. And I think that the Canadiens, having lost Weber, potentially having lost Danault, who knows with, well, actually, yeah, and who knows with Price, they're going to need bodies. They're going to need a team. So you cannot just say, we're going to move Drouin, eat up half of his salary, and take a fourth round pick in return. That's not. I think that would be poor asset management, and I think that it would be underselling the fact that this player, despite everything that has been said about him, is a good hockey player, and he can, in the right environment, can still be a very good hockey player. So, you know, maybe they work out something with a place where it's a low-key type of environment, like in Arizona or a place like that. Seattle, in its own way, could be a low-key type of environment. But
like Southern California is a ripe place to look for him. Both Southern California teams,
yeah,
would probably welcome an injection of talent and skill. They each have some prospects that they could trade. I don't think they would trade their top prospects, but they have a pretty deep well of prospects in both organizations that they could send to Montreal to get something like this done. They each have a decent amount of cap space. I mean, I don't know. I think that's a possibility worth looking at if I were Marc Bergevin, but it's you know, it's a delicate situation that you're right. If Seattle were to take him, it would be the easiest thing for the Canadiens. Like, then Marc Bergevin wouldn't have to deal with them and wouldn't have to deal with this, I should say, and could genuinely be happy for Jonathan Drouin to go to a place where he does have a decent chance of succeeding, getting a new start. It would just be the best for all parties involved, I think. If it doesn't happen, then I do think they're probably going to have to eat some salary on it. Like, it's one or the other. Either you trade him for very little, you trade him for that fourth round pick that you mentioned, or you eat $2 million on a salary and you get something. My only thing with the get something is, like, how many prospects does this organization need? You know, at a certain point, you're flooded with draft picks and prospects, and listen, they're not all great. You can always add good prospects. I don't think you're going to get a good prospect for Jonathan Drouin. You're not going to get a tier one prospect in an organization, you know? So you're going to get...
They don't need another Cam Hillis, you know?
Exactly, which is the type of prospect that you would probably get. So if you have a choice between the two, I take unloading the whole salary for a fourth round pick as opposed to eating some and getting some sort of middling prospect for him is the smarter way to go. But we should say that I think I speak for both of us that we're happy that to hear that Jonathan Drouin is doing better. We should mention that. I mean, it's really never know. I don't think we're ever going to get the full extent to what happened and how he dealt with it. But for him to miss that entire run, like, think of how difficult that must have been for him to not be able to take part in that, to watch his team succeed without him, to basically be an afterthought throughout that run. And not as any, you know, I don't think being an afterthought was not like, we've all forgotten about Jonathan Drouin, but, you know, he was asked for privacy. No one wanted to talk about his situation because we don't know what's going on, and the Canadiens were doing well. And so, but I thought about him numerous occasions during that run, some of the bigger moments. I thought about, like, how is he ingesting this? How is he taking this in? How is he watching this? And it made me sad, honestly. Like, it just seemed like a sad thing for him that this team that he wanted so badly to be good for, he wanted so badly to be the star that this team, the local star that this team has lacked forever, went about all the steps to do it and never happened for him. Not only never happened for him, but he wound up in this situation. Then to just watch the team go on this run without him must have been just absolutely excruciating. So, you know, I just want to say that I hope that whatever solution Marc Bergevin is able to find to this situation, whatever team he's able to put Jonathan Drouin on, I hope it gives his career a second wind and that he's able to succeed and just feel good about himself. Like, that's really all I want there.
Yeah, man, those are the right words to say, and I fully agree with you on everything you said. Joe, the thing is, you know, there are some guys that get a bad reputation around the league, and they're tagged as being troublemakers, problem guys. They've got issues or whatever. I don't see Jonathan Drouin being a guy like that. You know, he's a guy who's got unfulfilled potential, but it's not as though he went, you know, his whole career without doing that, and now he's 33 years old and it's the end of the road. I mean, there's still a legitimate chance that he, you know, that he finds a way to bank on that potential. And the way that he played for the Montreal Canadiens, I think that statistics have been very, very harsh on him, but the eye test to me was different because... Yeah. Ever since, you know, that we everything we said about that summer, we watched video with Dominique Ducharme, came back, different attitude, different approach to the game, trying to stay closer to the puck, being more involved in the game instead of waiting for the game to come at him, all that stuff. I think that from that point on, he seemed like a different player. And the on-ice drama, I won't call it a tragedy, but let's say a drama, the on-ice issue that's must have been frustrating for him and must have made even more difficult for things to, you know, to try to stop the whirlwind and the vicious circle is that he was doing the right things most of the time and even this season, but it's just that, you know, you keep repeating yourself, you know, if I keep doing the right things, things are going to end up turning my way. And coaches repeat that same thing to the players, you know, if we keep doing what you do, and eventually, you know, the tide will turn. It never turned for Jonathan Drouin. And even though I think that he was playing the right way as much as Jonathan Drouin style of player can play the right way. But at some point, it's sort of unravel, and he's like, man, why is it that I keep doing the right thing, and it never pays off, and my stats are ugly, my ice time is going down, I'm criticized for my effectiveness, but I'm playing better than I used to. Mm-hmm. And the last few weeks before he left, then you could see all the bad, you know, the bad habits coming back in a hurry, the way that he used to be when he first came in Montreal. But he had cleaned that up from his game, and it came back quickly.
Well, you have to wonder if the situation didn't contribute to that.
Oh, you know? There's no doubt. Yeah, it's intertwined. It. Yeah.
So that's, yeah. And so just before So anyhow, all the best, Joe. And it's going to be interesting over the next couple of weeks to see how Marc Bergevin is able to navigate that, or if Seattle even takes him. I agree it's unlikely. I mean, I would. I don't think they will. Probably not. But just because they have so many other risky talented forwards to choose from, that maybe they would choose to just go in another direction.
Looking for an assist with your credit card but can't get a hold of anyone? Luckily, with 24/7 US-based live customer service from Discover, everyone has the option to talk to a real person anytime, day or night. Yep, you heard that right. You can talk to a real human in customer service at any time. Sounds like a real game changer if you ask us. Make the right call and get the service you deserve with Discover. Limitations apply. See terms at discover.com/creditcard.
And now, two pigeons bemoaning the fact you can stream DirecTV satellite-free.
Hey, Frank, a little birdie told me you don't need a satellite dish to get DirecTV.
Which little birdie?
Was it Jimmy the Sparrow?
It's a figure of speech. Point is, you can stream DirecTV over the internet now.
Oh, sure. Next you're going to tell me those big birds are made of metal and filled with people, right?
You mean airplanes?
Stream DirecTV without a satellite dish. Call 1-800-DIRECTV. Terms or restrictions apply.
I want to finish with Phil Deno, just because I find his situation to be so intriguing. It's been almost a year now, 10 months, since he came out on Zoom following the bubble playoffs and raised questions about his role. That was in September?
Yeah. Late August, early September.
Almost a year. And ever since that time, this has been sort of his defining thing. It's incredible to me that it's rare that you find a player who so openly discusses things like that. And expresses his dissatisfaction with a certain situation and be like, this is what happened to me in terms of my role in the playoffs, and it's not what I want. And so I think a lot of people are making a thing about the term and the money and and yes, it's important to both sides. What I find most interesting about Philip Deneau, and this is why I think Seattle should absolutely use this window and take him, is that his decision here is not only going to be based on term and money, it's going to be based on role in a big way. And I don't think enough people really understand to what extent that's important to him. He views himself as a top six center in the NHL. He does not have a desire to become what he was in the playoffs. Like, and that's, again, ice time would suggest that he was a top center on the team. But, you know, being given these specific defensive assignments, like he still sees himself as a two-way player and not strictly a defensive player. And I look at the way that Philip Deneau is leaving, if he's indeed leaving, but with this sort of standoff with Marc Bergevin, you know, and I think, you know, you wrote it recently in the Joel Bouchard article that there's this line of people who leave the organization not on the best terms with Marc Bergevin. I can't help but look at Philip Deneau if he actually leaves, and that being the case, that he's going to leave somewhat bitter at how things ended in Montreal. And I want to hear you on this. I haven't been able to decide if Phil is right to demand the money and term that he wants in this environment. If all the offensive metrics that play in his favor are in fact more his doing than we give him credit for, instead of just saying, oh, well, that's because he played with Gallagher. I will never criticize a player for taking the opportunity to go to UFA and sign their big contract. That I will never criticize any player for. But I just feel like this could have ended differently, if indeed it's coming to an end. But it seems to be acrimonious right now. Like, how do you feel about the potential end of the Philip Deneau years in Montreal?
I think it's unfortunate. And when when you said it, it looks as though it's going to be the end. Our colleague Jonathan Bernier from the Journal de Montréal was pointing out to the fact that Philippe Dano has put his house for sale, which is usually a telling sign. So it doesn't, when you reach that decision, it's because you don't think that you're coming back. I think that there are a lot of variables at play. But yes, role is the first one. And I think that any player that's performing, that's effective and helping your team to win, will want to be recognized or feel desired by the team. You know, he'll want the team to send the message that, hey, we're counting on you. We value you. Money in term are two ways to express how you value a player. But sometimes there's been occasions where Marc Bergevin had opportunities to express that he valued Philippe Dano, and he didn't really embrace those opportunities, and it remained somewhat lukewarm. And I think that it used to be a guy, he's a guy that he contributed to him being drafted by the Chicago Blackhawks. You could argue that it's probably the best trade he ever made, bringing him to Montreal in exchange for a couple of months of Dale Weiss and Thomas Fleischman. So I think that he recognized how good a player he was. Did he sour on him, or is it just that
I think Dano was rejecting ready to... Dano rejecting that contract, I feel like Bergevin took that personally. I feel like Bergevin thought that that contract offer was more than fair, was actually generous, and the fact that he entered into contract talks with Phil Dano before Brendan Gallagher.
Yeah.
I really feel that him rejecting that offer soured that relationship beyond repair. Let's see. Maybe I'm wrong.
But
maybe the next 10 days
you will be different. I don't think so. I think that if he comes back to Montreal, it'll be after July 28th. I don't think that anything's going to happen before that. I don't think so. But you cannot let ego and feelings like that on both sides creep in and take precedent over a course of a year. It's not like something happens, it's emotional, and it evolves in a few days and it explains a certain outcome. This is a full year. So he refused an offer, and then 10 months after, it's the aftermath of him refusing an offer that still explains the situation. I mean, at some point, man.
Let's do a hypothetical. Let's do a hypothetical and do it from Marc Bergevin's point of view. And I think a lot of people can relate to this. Like, let's say you're at work and you're in contract talks with your work, okay? And work gives you an offer. You reject it. Is it not fair for your work to expect you to counteroffer, to come back with what you're looking for? So this is pure speculation. Let's say hypothetically that offer was dropped in September of last year, and that maybe, like, the fact that the Canadians are willing, you know, as our Pierre LeBrun reported, and I think, you know, both of us had the same sense that the Canadians were willing to let Dano go to market, see what's out there, and give him the chance to come back to them after the fact. That's obviously, they're banking on the market not being exactly what Phil Dano expected.
Yeah.
But it also suggests to me that maybe they never got that counteroffer from Phil's camp. Maybe they've just been waiting on this offer. It's just been floating. It was rejected, fine, but what do you want? Engage with us. Kind of thing, you know, like we need you to engage into this conversation. It can't just be us continually making offers to you. Come to us with an offer. So I don't know whether that's happened or not. Maybe it has. I can't say for sure, but I don't get the sense that it has. I don't get the sense there's been much conversation about his contract at all since last September.
No, because I mean, Philippe Dano was the first one to admit that, you know, it got into his head that all that situation was putting extra pressure on him, and the fact that he didn't have a great beginning of season, it affected him a lot. So if you want to, if you try to put this aside and focus on hockey, to ask your agents at the same time, well, let's keep the talks open and let's, you know, let's engage. It's probably not the best way to try to put these things aside and focus on hockey. There was, I mean, it's for me, it's just speculation. I don't know if that's how it turned out for him, but what thing is clear is that it bothered him, the fact that this situation was not resolved when the season started. From that point on, you know, you look around, you look across the league, and you might see the grass is greener somewhere else. You might say, well, you know what, it might not be my hometown, but you know, I can find a team that's going to play me as a second line center. It could be Columbus, it could be Arizona, it could be, you know, it could be
Vegas.
Could be a variety of places. It could be Vegas.
Vegas for sure. Would be a good fit for him. Anyhow,
it could be Boston. It you know, if they did not resign David Krejci, it could be Boston. There are tons of places. So I think that coming back to your first point, when you mentioned the advanced metrics, I think that the teams that value these numbers the most are going to be very intrigued by Philippe Danault and are probably more likely to give him, to listen to what he's got to say and be more inclined to give him what he wants, because they're going to be able to see 5-on-5, his level of effectiveness, not only, you know, the time spent in the other zone or the chances generated or the goals per 60 or whatever, but also the fact that he's playing against top lines and those top lines are not producing when he's on the ice against them. You put that together, and he's the centerman. Of course, the driving offense part of it is somewhat related to Brendan Gallagher, but he's still the centerman who's got those defensive missions, you know, asked from him. I think that it's very attractive, and the overall goals and assists have something to do with the fact that Danault doesn't play any power play. Maybe that's something that he's got a beef against when it comes to Montreal, saying, wait a minute, you know, you play me a lot, but I'm your best face-off guy and you don't put me on the power play ever. That might be a point of contention for him too. So I easily see how he can be a valued player. The timing in the current environment, in the current financial landscape, might not be the best for him to get as much as $5.5 or $6 million a year. But honestly, I wouldn't be surprised if he eventually got what he wanted somewhere along those lines, because teams are always in need of centers.
Yeah. I mean, I mentioned Vegas just because, you know, you shouldn't be surprised if he were to take the same offer from Vegas as Montreal gave, you know, because the tax situation is different. Seattle, same deal. No state tax. No state tax in Nevada. No state tax in Tennessee, no state tax in Texas. Like, the same issue that comes up with the Canadians. So if Phil Danault eventually signs for 6 years and $30 million, don't be like, oh my God, how did he not take the same offer with the Canadians? There's
But the role is going to be there too. You mentioned Vegas. I mean, right now they're playing Garnett Stephenson.
Chandler Stephenson.
Chandler Stephenson. I'm mixing up with the former
pitcher. With Garnett Hathaway.
Yeah, that's it. So yes. Chandler Stephenson, you know, as their first line center. There are opportunities for sentiment who would like to play in Vegas.
Imagine Phil the Golden being reunited Knights. With Max. Phil, Max, Mark Stone. What a line.
How about that? Yeah, that would be possession line galore. So, you know, the Golden Knights are in a situation where they, you know, Alec Martinez is ready to walk away as a free agent. They could say, well, you know what? We're going to devote that money to Philippe Danault and ask young Nick Hague to replace Martinez, and away we go. That's not out of, you know, that's not crazy. No. So anyway, so I cannot blame Danault for thinking that there's something out there for him. And it's a risky proposition from the Canadiens to say, you know what, go test the market and we'll talk again. Because out of 31 teams, there might be at least one that'll say, you know what, we'll get you what you want.
Yeah, I don't think, I mean, unless Phil has made some sort of commitment to Montreal that I'll give you right to match. But sure doesn't sound like it. I mean, if he sold his house and he's already kind of inclined to the fact that he's leaving. It's, you know, it just, you know, to wrap things up here, kind of fits perfectly with this crazy offseason since, like, when was game five? Like 12 days ago? Less than 2 weeks ago?
Yeah.
Is that right? Yeah, somewhere around there. So in that time, we've had Shea Weber's career being put somewhat in doubt, Carey Price being exposed, Phil Danault looking like he's on the way out. I mean, there's a lot of turnover here. And again, I would be remiss if we only talked about that, because there are things in place to handle this. And this is something that the Canadians have anticipated for some time. Not the Weber and the Price thing, but the possibility that Danault and Tatar would be gone was long anticipated by the Canadians. They have a bunch of young centers who are ready to take the next step within the organization. They can't perfectly replace what Danault does, but the Canadians are not exactly completely screwed if Danault were to walk away for nothing. They should add a veteran center to help them, but they have four centers in the organization who are ready to play in the NHL. That's a fact. So
yeah,
you got to see to what extent. I understand your trepidation about not having a veteran center, but it's not, it could be worse. That's all I'm saying. The situation could be worse.
Well, I think that for those people who thought that, who were wondering why Jake Evans was protected, ahead of guys like Drouin, I think that's one of the reasons, because he's going to get some of the assignments that Danault used to have, if Danault indeed is leaving. But, I mean, with money available now, I think that the Canadians could find a cheaper alternative to, you know, to at least handle some of the defensive responsibilities. Guys like Sean Corrali or Nick Bonino could be interesting. And if they want to add some offensive zip, I think that Paul Stastny still has some good hockey in him. So those guys will all cost half of what Danault is looking for, or less. So there might be, if you want to look at Jesper Kotkaniemi and say, okay, we're gonna give you the keys to the car, and now it's your turn to drive, and it's your turn to show us that you can do the job next to Nick Suzuki. Well, that's the opportunity right there, because as long as Danault was there, well, Kotkaniemi could remain potentially the third line center. If they switch to that sort of solution to replace Danault, then the onus is on Kotkaniemi to really step up and be the best version of himself.
Well, like
Nick Chum likes to say.
I mean, the Canadians don't have a choice. I mean, they have to know what he can do at some point. They do have to give him the keys to the car and see if he can drive. And if he crashes the car, then at least you know that. You know, you got to know what you have. And so, I don't know. I'm of the mind that, and this is, I think, a large part of why Phil is so, if he's eager to leave, this is why he's eager to leave, because he sees that coming, whether he's here or not. Whether he's in Montreal or not, at some point, Kotkaniemi is going to get those keys. And then Phil's left with hoping that he can't drive.
Yeah.
You know? And so that's not a good situation, because if he can drive, then you're out of the role that you wanted. So, in any case, all this to say, you know, it's a far more interesting offseason for the Canadians than I thought it would be 2 weeks ago when they were still playing in the Stanley Cup final. We've got, you know, 10 days or so of offseason left before Marc-Antoine and I take a much deserved break. And so we will be back to discuss all the latest.
There's the draft still to come, and then the UFA market. The draft still to come,
and the expansion draft, and the UFA market. So we'll probably be back after the expansion draft, probably on Thursday. Talk about that in French on Le Sport Athlétique. Until then, a reminder, as always, if you've not subscribed to The Athletic, you should do so ASAP, because our off-season coverage is really where our work shines. It's where the depth of coverage on every single team really comes to the forefront. You just have to look at the release of the expansion lists on Sunday as an example. We have one file that has all the protected and exposed players, but more importantly, has a link to every single story that our entire team published, all in one place where you can get. If you're wondering why the New York Islanders exposed Jordan Eberle and Josh Bailey, we have something on that. There's something on every possible thing that you could want to know about this process is available. To subscribe at a discount, you can always go to theathletic.com/athletic support. That is theathletic.com/athletic support. So having said that, enjoy the rest of the week. Enjoy the expansion draft on Wednesday evening. And we should be back with you en français on Thursday following the expansion draft.
Bye-bye, everybody.